Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got Scott Cassidy with me. Hey, Scott.
Hey.
All right. Scott Cassidy is a writer and director. He made the film Passenger Man that was at Film Invasion Los Angeles in 2020, which I was very happy to have it there. And then I'm even happier to say that Passenger Man, the film that Scott made, out in Austin, here I am adding extra info, Passenger Man is in the Discover Indie Film TV series. It's in season 4, episode 9, and I highly recommend you watch it. You just go to anywhere you can find Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film. To watch Scott's episode, go to season 4, episode 9. And of course, you should just watch it all. You should buy them by the season and enjoy them and watch them over and over, because these films are so good. Yours, all the rest. Multiple viewings is actually great.
Yeah, it's great to share with other people too, who don't usually get to see, you know, short films at all, really.
Yeah, you don't get to see shorts. And then, boy, it pisses me off when I see the short list for the Oscars. And I watch them, and some are wonderful, and some are like, really? Really? Out of the 2,000 shorts made last year, those are the best 10? Like, no, I saw a better film. But anyway, that's me blabbing on an unrelated topic, because Scott is here in this episode, last episode of this podcast. We interviewed Scott. This time, we're going to get to hear Scott's answers to the four questions, which are favorite films of all time, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser known film that people should seek out. And I'm going to stop blabbing, Scott, and just let share.
All right. Well, I think I took this way too seriously.
That's not possible.
Okay, good. A lot of thought was put into this, and I hemmed and hawed, and it was really hard getting down to three favorite films of all time. I guess maybe we'll do that one last.
Up to you.
Okay, I can go whatever. All right.
You can do whatever you want.
Well, I'll go with a film you feel is underrated. So this is a 2014 film called Leviathan. It was directed by Andrei Zvyagintsev, who, in my opinion, like, who cares, but is maybe the best filmmaker in the world right now, if you ask me. But he's Russian and not very well seen over here. It feels a little wrong to put it in underrated, because it, like, won awards and is generally well received and all that. But the reason I'm putting it here is because I think it's like one of the 15 greatest films I've ever seen in my life.
And you never get to discuss it with people because no one else has seen it.
Yeah, I know, no one's seen it.
Unless you've said, go watch Leviathan and then come over for a glass, we'll open a bottle of wine this weekend.
Or vodka, whatever. Got to keep with the theme. It's a really great movie. It feels a lot like The Godfather, I guess, in that it's like an epic story, but it's focused on like a tight few number of characters. So it's like intimate and epic at the same time. And the camera moves really great. And it's very much about like Russian history. Like, that adds to it, but you don't have to know anything or care about Russia to get anything out of it. Like, there's a lot of universal truths, ugly truths about like government and friendship and like the church and stuff like that. It's a really fascinating movie.
For sure. Yeah. And, I think, was it your year? Did you see a Russian comedy that was in, Film Invasion Los Angeles the year your film was? About the ambulance drivers?
Yes.
Why am I blanking on the name? I'm so embarrassed. I can't remember the name. But it was a wonderful Russian film, and it was like, oh my God, what do we... Because Russian cinema is so great.
It is. I think so.
And I was so honored that our little festival got a submission from Russia. Yeah. And then it was honestly one of the best films.
I remember that one for sure.
Yeah. I was actually happy that we were virtual, because if we were in the theater, I probably would have been outweighed if I wanted to show, because I also think it was a little long. It was like 20 minutes. So a 20 minute film out of Russia that no one's heard of and the filmmakers won't be there.
Right. That's a tough sell, I guess.
It's a pretty tough sell as a programmer, you know, the board will look at you and go, yeah, no, there's all these great local films too. And I would have been like, that's true. But virtual, I didn't have to hold back.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. That was a fun one. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so Leviathan is your underrated.
Okay.
You want to go to overrated or lesser known?
Yeah, we can do overrated. I kind of want to cheat with this one, if that's all right.
Cheating is encouraged.
Okay. I'm going to go a TV show, if that's all right. Yeah. I'm going to do Breaking Bad.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So... it's a good show. Like, I'm not saying it's bad or anything, right? It's an excellent TV show, but a friend of mine said to me, in completely serious, and this is someone whose opinion I respect, they said, Breaking Bad is the greatest story about the American dream since The Great Gatsby. And I was like, no. Don't go crazy. It's a little overrated. It's not even like a top 15, 20 TV show for me. And it's not because it does anything particularly bad, but to me, it's like, have you seen Breaking Bad?
I did.
Okay. I think my issue was the finale really rubbed me wrong because... after, if the point of the show is that Walt's actions were like bad and the result is he loses his family and his life and his money and all that. Sorry, spoilers for Breaking Bad.
I don't think you can spoil a 10-year-old TV show.
Okay. But then why he's a little too like successful in a satisfying way in the finale. Like he gets this revenge against his business partners. He gets the money to his son, you know, he gets to outsmart everyone and be a badass. And it's a little fan servicey and like a little too positive. And I don't think that's what I wanted for the character, if that makes sense.
Sure. I always tell everyone, you can say something's overrated and really like it.
But yeah, no, I've heard
Breaking Bad referred to as like, I think it was, the timing of it was pivotal for television to be becoming more cinematic. And it was sort of the first time in a way that, and now someone will be able to name like Game of Thrones and other things, but it was sort of the turn where TV started becoming better. Like,
yeah. I mean, so it was definitely in that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it gets outweighed importance for that. Like I may have called it one of the best shows of all time. But there's been a lot of great TV since.
Yeah, and I'm not saying if someone's saying it's the best show ever, I'm going to disagree that much. It's just, I mean, I think thematically there's just flaws that really bothered me.
Yeah.
And especially like the fandom. Like I think people misread the show a lot because it was a lot of like, Walter White's so cool. He's so badass. And it's like, that's not the point. And I feel like maybe the show had too much mixed messaging to kind of encourage that type of interpretation.
For sure. For sure. They didn't, I mean, they could go back on it and I'm sure they could temper that and show all when Walt would step over the line, particularly, poisoning the kid.
They brought the hammer down several times on him.
Yeah. But
just over the course of the show, there's maybe like just too many triumphant moments that.
Sure.
And I understand it's a show. It has to be enjoyable and fun to watch too. But you saw it with, what's her name? Anna Gunn, who played Skylar. Mm-hmm. Really nasty online backlash. Like I hate her, you know, like getting actual death threats and stuff in real life.
She
her
did.
Character was,
because she blew off. Cause she, that's
her
funny because
character was holding him back or something.
She was the moral compass, right? When he went too far for her, when he lost her, that's when he couldn't admit it to himself.
Right.
But that's when All his efforts at success have failed because he is a failure because he lost her.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I mean, maybe I was just reading the wrong parts of the internet, but it was too many people that are like, good, she's out of the way, or, you know, it.
The internet sucks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, cool pick. And I totally appreciate going for that.
Throw a little shade on Breaking Bad. Why not?
Why not?
Okay. Fantastic show, but not the best American Dream story since Great Gatsby.
That was hyperbole. That's the definition of hyperbole, right? American Dream. No, if anything, it's an American cautionary tale.
Well, yeah, like the failure of the American Dream. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I obviously, well, whatever, we don't have to discuss Breaking Bad anymore. Do you want to do your lesser known or your favorite?
Yeah, sure. So I think I've got a good one. I really love this movie. I saw it in college, you know, film study class, whatever, from 1973, directed by Larry Cohen, Black Caesar, which is my favorite, and I think the best like blaxploitation film ever made, if you know that genre. And stars Fred Williamson, who's pretty awesome. And the story is a riff on the Cagney Little Caesar. So it's about, you know, like a street criminal rising and falling in like Harlem in the 50s. But it's shot all, you know, in New York. The cinematography is like super low budget, and you can tell, but it's awesome and it's really cool. But it has a lot to say beyond being really fun. Like, sometimes I think like blaxploitation kind of suffers from like just being like a male power fantasy, which obviously they needed some and were entitled to having. But this is like a kind of a complex like character study, and it's about race and masculinity and stuff. And like a character hits their girlfriend in it, and but then gets called out on it and pays for it in the movie. And the main character in towards the end in like a climax is like getting revenge on a corrupt racist cop. And to do that, he takes he used to be a shoeshine boy. He takes the shoeshine black and gives him blackface and makes him do a blackface routine before killing him. It's like this cathartic, very interesting revenge to see it on a cop and to watch it now. It's a fascinating, very stylized movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone who thought that all these sentiments are new.
No. Yeah. Oh, and I forgot. I buried the lead. All the music is written and performed by James Brown.
Fantastic. I was gonna add, I would assume that if Quentin Tarantino became a fan of this podcast, he'd be applauding, like he'd be sitting in the car going, yes, thank you for naming Black Caesar, because
No, it's really cool. Yeah. Like if you've never seen any movies like this, like, I think this is a good one.
You know, the films of that era and that genre I've seen, you know, I saw Coffee and Shaft and a couple other Pam Greers.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to...
Which there's always an element of quality to them that rises above blaxploitation. Yeah. I'm sure there's ones that don't rise above, but yeah, there's something going on there. It was counterculture.
Mm-hmm. And it's... It came out on Blu-ray like a couple of years ago. Like you can find this.
Oh, excellent. All right, sir. Well, now the time has come
for
faves. And I'm already going to tell you, since you had I am going to ask you the bonus question of, all right, so if you've been given a fourth, what was almost on the list? Because I'd be curious.
Fourth? Should I do that first or save
it? Sure. You want to do your fourth and then you'll do the top
three? Okay. I think my last cut was Rififi. Have you seen Rififi?
I don't think so.
It's Jules Dassin from the 50s. It's like a jewel heist movie. And he did it in France after he'd been blacklisted by the whole McCarthy stuff and had to go over there and make films. And it's got this great, like 30-minute, no dial, completely silent, like heist sequence. like in the middle that's really cool. And but you know, they lose it all and they all die, and it's very French and depressing. It's a great movie, and Jules Dassin, the director and writer himself, he plays one of the characters in the film, and his character in the film rats out and gets like brutally killed for it when he in real life didn't rat out in the McCarthy hearings and got blacklisted for it. It's really fascinating.
Sounds very cool. Yeah, I'm cool. Not well versed enough in French cinema, but every time well, obviously there's that French cinema gets a bonus, which is if I've heard about it, it's really good. And so all the French stuff I've watched is great.
The bad stuff doesn't get written down. So
no, the bad stuff, their version of, who should I pick on? Like I loved the film Summer School as a kid, the old Mark Harmon movie, but the Summer School of France ain't gonna get over to us.
It's not spreading out in the global.
No, we get Irreversible and all the Genet films, all these great, great films.
Yeah. But no, it's a cool, really great heist movie, and you can see a lot of influence on stuff later.
Cool.
Soderbergh and stuff like that.
I was going to say, heisty makes me think of Soderbergh these days.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, I guess. Now here comes the three.
Okay. Well, I couldn't put these in order, so this is maybe boring, but Vertigo is probably the best movie I've ever seen. I got to see it a few years ago, like a 35mm print at the Alamo Drafthouse before... COVID made that not happen. And I saw it with a crowd, and it was like 50-50 people who had seen it before and that had never seen it. And it was a fascinating experience because that movie is more psychologically screwed up than you're expecting. And there was a lot of laughter, that uncomfortable, I don't know what to do with this, I'm going to chuckle type of laughter from the audience. It was a fun audience experience. That movie's great.
I love Hitchcock.
Yeah, that's probably my Hitchcock choice, and then it's the choice. And it's funny because I'm oftentimes like, the ending's got to nail it and stick the landing for me to really love a film. And I don't love the last 30 seconds. It's a little not executed that well. I mean, it's kind of weird, right? The nun comes out and scares her off the roof and it ends. It's kind of weird. But it was also amazing up until that. I didn't care about the ending, which is usually the opposite for me. So that was funny.
So my Vertigo confession would be, I saw it in college and since seeing it, saw Mel Brooks's High Anxiety a couple times.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sitting here in my brain, I keep picturing moments. I got to revisit Vertigo to push High Anxiety out, because I thought High Anxiety was as funny as Blazing Saddles, just it was all about Hitchcock films.
Yeah, no, that was a good one.
Yeah.
I watched it, and then recently I saw it for a second, and now I'm up to like 5-6 times. It really coalesced as my favorite, I guess.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Well, we've got two more.
Yeah. So the next one I saw in college when I was getting my master's in like a world cinema class. And it was not available. My professor bought it on the street out of like someone's coat of Hong Kong on Laserdisc. And brought it to the school. So that's how I saw it. I only saw it once. And that's A Brighter Summer Day by Edward Yang. That's 1991, I think. He did E.E. Y.I.Y.I. Have you seen, maybe heard of that one? So this is, it's 4 hours long. And it's about, I don't know, like Taiwanese kids growing up in the 50s and 60s, and they're in gangs, and it's politics and identity, and it's really dense. It's like a novel. And yet it's so watchable, and I mean, I have no real knowledge or that many overlapping experiences with a Taiwanese teenager in the 50s, but like I connected so much, and it's got a great, it really builds and crescendos into this gut punch of an ending. It's a great movie to check out.
Yeah. Endings are huge.
It helps.
It helps a lot.
Yeah. But yeah,
obviously that's one I haven't seen. So,
Yeah, it's worth checking out. Cause I saw it, that was 08. And then it finally Criterion put it out on disc in like 18. So like 10 years later, I got to watch it for a second time.
Oh, nice. And then I assume it's probably, there's a Criterion channel now, right? Like you can,
I think it's subscribe. On there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, true, right? If I wasn't watching hundreds of films for the festivals, I'd probably get Criterion. Yeah,
4 hours is a big one. It has a natural stopping point. You can do it in 2 days. So.
Oh, good. Yeah, I bet it did. I bet they paused at the theater. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So, yeah, it's really good.
All right. Well, you've got one more.
All right. So the last one I would describe as a flawed, over the top, like self-pitying, self-aggrandizing, like narcissistic mess of a movie that also is maybe the greatest movie I've ever seen. And it's both in spite of those things and also kind of because of those things. And it's All That Jazz by Bob Fosse, which is a musical, which isn't my favorite genre. And it's, I mean, the main character is, you know, he doesn't even try to hide that it's him. And it's, I don't know, it's something about it. It deals with death. He's dying and, you know, dies at the end of the movie. And it's, I love Roy Scheider, big fan, Jaws and all that stuff. I think it's the editing. It's maybe like the best edited movie I've ever seen. Like you can watch it on mute and it's like a degree in film editing. Like, it's such a great movie.
He's actually an underrated filmmaker because everyone thinks of him as a choreographer, you know, Broadway choreographer and this and that, and obviously a director on Broadway and stuff. But yeah, his films are special. We actually have a little collection of his stuff on DVD because, you know, I live with someone who loves Sweet Charity.
Oh, okay.
And some of the other titles. And I was like,
Cabaret, of course, yeah.
I think Cabaret is the best musical I ever saw in person.
Like, oh, okay.
Like, hands down, Cabaret slays me. And I am a person, full confession, who hated musicals for about 45 years or longer. And now I realize there are some really good ones, and it's just I was dragged to the occasional Andrew Lloyd Webber piece of crap and didn't really get that there was musicals with great stories and jazzier music and interesting,
but more filmmaking to it than
but even live there's a big, you know, some musicals are you know, the version of pop music, and others are classical or, you know, something that would interest someone like me more. Obviously, the world wanted to see the Dirty Dancing musical. Fair enough.
That's fine.
Wasn't for me.
Okay. Yeah, that's not my favorite either. But
what are you going to do?
I know, it's great.
Not everything's for everyone, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
But so yeah, that was my list that I slaved over.
That's a
over.
Great list. I'm glad. I'm happy to see Fosse on there. That's great.
Okay, cool.
And I don't remember anything from it. It's not one that we've rewatched. So I guess I'm gonna.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna. But we have it. I think we have it. So because that's what we do as adults. We buy things.
Actual
collect
physical
them, and it's like, okay, now that it's in the collection, Maybe we won't watch it. Maybe we'll watch. We'll watch what's on Amazon or Netflix right now, and you know, really got to dive back into that library we've built. Mm. All right. Well, I guess I'm going to wrap us up.
Okay.
Four questions. That was completed. Fun, Scott. I appreciate your answers. If I had the time, I'd feel like, okay, I got some homework to do. I'm gonna seek out these movies right away. But instead, they'll be on the. I got a film festival to get through. So anyhow,
I know. Can only imagine how long your watch list is.
Yeah, I mean, so right now we've broken 700 films for the Sherman Oaks Film Festival as far as submissions. And I'm still an idiot and I still watch everything. Like, there's jury members who just watch shorts. There's filmmakers. There's jury members who just watch features or documentaries. And I'm like, I got to watch them all, because what if there's something that no one else catches as great except me?
Well, as someone who's submitted to festivals that sometimes feels like no one watches all of them, we greatly appreciate you putting that time.
Thank you. It's easy, you know. But anyhow, I will wrap up this podcast. I believe my memory serves. If people want to learn more about you, there's an out-of-date website called scottcassidyfilm.com.
That's it, yeah.
And Scott and Cassidy are easy to spell, people. All right. So is Jeff Howard, actually. It's horribly generic, but no one misspells it in this country, at least. So you heard Scott's answers to the Discovery Indie Film 4 questions. And if you want to see his film Passenger Man, which was at Filmvasion LA in 2020, you can watch it. Go to Discover Indie Film on Amazon Prime Video. Just get Prime Video somehow, search for Discover Indie Film, buy season 4 and watch episode 9 first. Or you can watch them in order as long as you make it to 9. You better make it to 9. Nine's a great one. You get to see Passenger Man and To the Moon and Back. Come on. It's the best. And if you want to learn more about the TV series and podcast, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. And if you're on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And I did mention that Passenger Man was at Filmvasion Los Angeles. That's a festival that we hold every June. You can learn more at filminvasionla.com. And on social media, it's at FilmInvasionLA. And Fila, as I call it, for short. I know there is a clothing company called Fila, but FilmInvasionLA has a sister festival that's every November, the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. You can learn about that at ShermanOaksFF.com. And it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And I've said all I need to say. Thank you, Scott, for taking the time. And I'm glad to hear you enjoyed making the list.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Jeff. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening.